In many ways, hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, looms as the environmental issue of our times. It does touch on every aspect of our lives, the water that we drink, the air that we breathe, and the health of our communities. It also, many believe, threatens our global climate. It pits the largest corporate interests, big energy and Wall Street, against people and the environment. Winona Houter is an author, activist, and founder of Food and Water Watch. Food and Water Watch has been at the forefront of efforts to ban fracking around the country, and it was the first national advocacy organization to join grassroots activists calling for a ban on fracking. They contributed to a coalition that achieved the fracking ban in New York State and is involved in similar efforts around the country. Again, the name of the book is Fracopoly, The Battle for the Future of Energy and the Environment. And we welcome Winona Houter to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
I'm so pleased to be here.
Give us a sense of what brought you to want to look at fracking and this battle.
Well, you know, I had worked on renewable energy in the mid-1990s and really thought that we would very quickly be transitioning into a renewable energy future. Then in the early years of this new century, we started getting phone calls at my organization, Food and Water Watch, about fracking. I have to admit, I didn't know much about it at that time. After we really started looking at it, we realized that it was a very dangerous process for our water resources, for the communities where fracking is done, and for our global climate. And we became the first national organization to call for a ban of fracking. I was shocked to see how little of our electricity is actually generated from renewable energy. Only about 5.5% if you look at solar, wind, and geothermal. So I decided to go back and look at the story of how we ended up here and how the oil and gas industry has been able to gain so much political power.
So let's begin there. When you look at a timeline, when does this technology begin? Because it seems like it crept up pretty quick.
Well, that's right. And we hear a lot of misleading statements by the oil and gas industry, like we've been doing it for 50 years. Well, yes, water has been used in recovering oil and gas, but never at the quantities and never with the chemicals and the use of fine sand. The technologies really started coming together in the 1990s, but not really used commercially until getting closer to the turn of the 21st century, at least on any scale. And I do want to point out that many of the technologies that make fracking possible were developed with taxpayer dollars, because that's one of the things that I found in writing Fracopoly. Really, since 1913, unbelievably, a huge amount of the budget for research and energy has been around oil and gas technologies.
In your book, Foodopoly, you make the argument that lobbyists and the consolidation and corporate control of food protection is ultimately to blame for the unhealthy and agricultural policies of this country that do not work. Is it a similar setup here that it is lobbyists and corporations that are at the heart of this?
Well, you know, it really is. And I always like to start this discussion with saying that the debate over consolidation and monopoly power has been going on in our nation since Thomas Jefferson called for having in the Bill of Rights the right to be free of monopoly power. And I can tell you he wasn't concerned about consumer prices. It was concern about when you allow companies to continue to merge, acquire one another, and to become very, very large, they have a lot of not only economic power, but political power. And that's what's happened in the oil and gas industry, in the food industry, and in most of the businesses that we see in our nation. You have a handful of companies that have been allowed to become very, very large, to dominate the industry, and then they're actually able to write the rules. And this most recent debate over antitrust and actually the evisceration of our laws around monopoly power began in the 1980s under the Reagan administration, when they really changed the definition of what an antitrust violation is. And I have to say that both political parties have gone along with this reductionist view of what an antitrust violation is. And that's what's really allowed so many industries to become so large and so politically powerful, along with the changes in our campaign finance laws that they lobbied for, that now give corporations and a small number of very wealthy people the ability to exert so much influence over our political system.
You spend a lot of the book looking at the antitrust issues and deregulation of the natural gas industry, as well as natural gas electricity. Talk a little bit about why that matters so much.
Well, you know, a lot of the behaviors that we've seen most recently with the financial services industry took place in the 20s, and the electric industry and the gas industry was involved. And so when the Roosevelt administration came along, there were laws passed to curtail the ability of these industries to rip off consumers and to really structure them in a way so that the companies were supposed to concentrate on their actual core businesses. And that was true for the electric industry. And then for the natural gas industry, there was actually a regulatory regime set up to prevent the oil and gas industry from ripping off consumers. It gave the power to a federal agency to set prices based on the cost of production, and then to regulate pipelines. And I do want to mention that these companies were also allowed to have a hefty profit at the same time. Of course, neither the electric industry or the oil and gas industry liked these rules, and they spent the next 40 years fighting against them. So in the 1970s, under the Carter administration, there was legislation passed to actually get rid of the regulations around the cost of natural, this is interstate natural gas, and pipelines. And after that happened, it created a lot of incentives to do a lot more drilling, to build a lot more pipelines. In fact, we see after the deregulation of the natural gas industry was completed in the mid-1980s, since that time, we've seen about 950,000 miles of pipeline built. And then this push to drill for more gas led to the next deregulatory change around electricity. And there was a lot of interest from the electric industry, the financial services industry, the oil and gas industry to profit from the breakup of this huge $200 billion electric industry. And there were a number of changes made in the 1990s, especially under the Clinton administration, that created a wholesale market for electricity. And natural gas really benefited from that, because the whole impetus was to sell more and more and more electricity, and it's easier to build natural gas-fired electric plant, cheaper, and you also had the oil and gas industry, and a lot of the individuals who are really connected to it lobbying for this. So the Koch family was one of the big lobbyists for electricity deregulation for a number of reasons, both because they oppose regulation, but also because they wanted large manufacturers to be able to deal directly with these big energy power marketers. So you can see just by this brief description that the devil is really in the details around energy. And these changes that most people aren't aware of have led to fracking, along with changes under the Bush administration in the Energy Policy Act of 2005, where the oil and gas industry was exempted from our national environmental laws like the Safe Drinking Water Act. I mean, that's known as the Halliburton loophole. But there were two other measures in that legislation. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, this very obscure federal agency, was given enormous power over the building of new gas and electricity infrastructure. And they were given the power to actually condemn land, to make decisions about what happens at the local and the state level on these big building projects. And they were given the power to oversee the environmental assessment done under the National Environmental Policy Act, one of our most important environmental laws. And, of course, this agency known by its acronym FERC has almost never seen an oil and gas or electric project that they don't love. And then the other policy change was changes in the electric industry that have allowed about 20 large electric companies to get in every type of energy business, to be so large that they produce about half of the nation's electricity. And they are an industry that's driving more use of natural gas for electricity production.
The name of the book is Fracopoly, The Battle for the Future of Energy and the Environment. Our guest is Winona Houter. This idea, and I was surprised in reading the book, that one of the characters in it is Kenneth Lay of Enron fame. And you write that Ken Lay's ghost hovers around the debate around fracked gas. How so?
Well, he was one of the individuals who really pushed the deregulation of the electric industry and who formed very close ties with both a number of leading environmental organizations and with leading Democrats in promoting the idea that natural gas is a bridge fuel. And ironically, he began in the Nixon administration working shoulder to shoulder with one of these commissioners who was regulating the cost of natural gas. And Lay learned all about how gas and electricity were being regulated at the time. He went on to work. He had worked for, actually, Exxon, and he went on to the Department of the Interior, and then he went to a natural gas pipeline company that soon became Enron under his leadership. And, of course, most people who are old enough to remember know that Lay promoted electricity deregulation at the federal level and the state level, and then the empire that he set up ended up being focused mostly on manipulating the price of natural gas and electricity, bringing a major disaster in California where there were blackouts and the two largest utilities almost went bankrupt. He was indicted for his part in this scheme and, of course, died before he could go to jail. And I think that Ken Lay is exactly the kind of huckster that we've seen throughout the history of the oil and gas industry. Sometimes these people are the heads of major energy companies. Other times they are kind of on the cutting edge of trying to push new and dangerous technologies. And I think there's a real similarity, for instance, with Aubrey McClendon, who was the CEO of one of the large fracking companies, Chesapeake, who was addicted to debt. And while his company was engaged in drilling and fracking, they were focused mostly on selling the leases, especially to foreign countries, and profiting from the speculating on gas. He was, of course, eventually kicked out of Chesapeake and went on to form other ventures. And just earlier this year, he was indicted for antitrust violations around conspiracy on leases. And then he died mysteriously in a car accident the day after he was indicted. So I just think that these kind of very large characters have often played a very prominent role in the lack of oversight for the oil and gas industry. And, you know, and then there are the members of Congress who play a very large role. People like Senator Jim Inhofe, who is a very big defender of the oil and gas industry, who is known for going into Congress and holding a snowball and saying there can't be climate change because, you know, look at the big snowfall we've had in Washington, D.C. And so I'm trying to make the point in Fracopoly that we really need to look at what these policies are doing to the communities where there are people suffering from the effects on water and on air, and to our global climate, because despite what Ken Lay and many of the advocates for natural gas say, gas is methane. We have to do something in the very short term to turn the tide on climate change, and methane is a very potent greenhouse gas that in the short term, over the first 20 years that it's emitted, is a much more dangerous greenhouse gas than carbon. Methane dissipates more quickly, but in the first 20 years, it's a much more dangerous greenhouse gas. We should not be building another 40 years of infrastructure for the natural gas industry, and we really need to curtail the power of the fracopoly.
So in my last question to you, here we are in an election year, and I'm curious as to where you think this movement fits into the state of play when it comes to election 2016.
Well, I'm very excited about the progress that the movement to ban fracking has made. We know we've banned it in states like New York. There have been measures across the country, local measures, a moratorium in Maryland, and the movement is just gaining traction. And I think that's why we've seen during this election the two major Democratic candidates for the presidency talking about a ban on fracking, with Bernie Sanders calling for a ban and Hillary Clinton actually skating a little closer to opposing fracking. So I think the movement's going to continue to grow, and I'm excited about all of the young people who are challenging the status quo during this time of a major election, and it's our job to keep that movement growing, and no matter who is elected president, this movement is going to need to continue to grow, because we need to ban fracking, we need to keep fossil fuels in the ground, and I think that there is now so much energy around doing this that we're going to continue to see people pressing for real action. What we've found in our work at Food and Water Watch is that people are really tired of these small incremental steps forward, and they want to really fight for their children, their grandchildren, or in the case of these young people, for their future.
Well, the name of the new book is Fracopoly, The Battle for the Future of Energy and the Environment. It is published by The New Press. Winona Howder, I thank you very much for spending time with us. A great pleasure having you on the program.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is Fracopoly, The Battle for the Future of Energy and the Environment. Our guest has been Winona Howder. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.